Welcome back to Good Mood Podcast, where each episode promises to delve into the mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experience. I'm your host, Liz Leach, and I'm pleased to introduce you to this podcast. Jeff was born and bred in Sowerby Bridge, Coldale, West Yorkshire, where he's lived for over 70 years. This series of podcasts captures his story of growing up in Sowerby Bridge and how he entered into the world of performing arts and music. This podcast guarantees to provide an informative insight into life since the 1940s and opens up a perspective of how someone can choose to dedicate their life to creativity. Please subscribe to this podcast to be able to be alerted of new episodes, and also share this with friends and family who you think would be interested in the topic. When you have time, why not visit Jeff's website to find out more information about the work that he's done, which is jeffamos.wordpress.com. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi Jeff, we're back together again for another recording.
Eating biscuits.
And eating biscuits and drinking tea.
Yep.
Yeah, it's our ideal place.
Oh, I think so.
Tasty as ever as well, so thank you very much. Yeah, we've organised today's session and recording to have a chance to hear your stories around what you've contributed to the local area and where you've been actively involved in organising arts-based events and activities, and where you've helped to build some of the organisations to do that locally as well.
So, yeah, it's been quite interesting, really. I mean, on the very local thing, which was really not much to do directly with performing arts or music as a sentence. I sat on, partly because I was working for Jazz Centre North, based in Manchester then, so I was invited on the committee for Leeds College of Music, and there, so I sat there for 3 years, I think.
Okay.
You know, just quite interested in hearing what was going off, you know, that was fun. And Yorkshire Arts, as it was then, I sat on the, you know, the management committee there as well, which was quite interesting in another way. I managed, probably not going to remember now, to put through that when regional jazz musicians were putting in for funding, they could get rehearsal time.
Okay.
And it never happened. And I said, well, you know, it's a bit wrong to my way of thinking, because, okay, you know, the classical groups and whatever, it's that happens, like it's part of what they can apply for. And I said, but, you know, yes, but Jeff, some of it's just, well, and I don't know really what they wanted to say.
Okay.
I don't think they were that keen on it. He said, but isn't it all about improvisation? I says, well, here and there, but, you know, there's a lot of reading going off as well.
Absolutely.
And they have to rehearse.
Yeah.
And they rehearse out of their own pocket. And, you know, and I really do think it's unfair. They should be at least allowed to put that, you know, onto their applications.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised it got carried quite easily by other members who I thought were maybe just a bit more, you know, on the side of classical music. Alan Hacker, a wonderful clarinetist, and I could see him nodding when I was talking about this. And I wish I could have, there was another person, Philip, and I think, was he an organist or something? But he was supporting as well. So eventually I think that the chair, you know, got wind of, well, this isn't going to go my way, you know, so. And yeah, and so that happened on occasion after that, and so that, I was quite pleased with that outcome there.
So when was that? What kind of era was that?
Well, that was when I went to Jazz Centre North. It was 1983 to 86.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got sandbagged, the organisation. But that, so that was okay, and it was a first, and I was pleased that happened. But also, I got invited on the Leisure Services Committee for Calderdale.
Okay.
And not only that, I got a vote, which is, I wasn't expecting.
Right.
Yeah.
So what did that involve then?
Well, it involved looking at some very, very odd applications that were, they were stuffed full of, you know, we need money for this and we need money for that, and the amounts they were asking for.
So what kind of things did people apply for then?
Well, we had, you know, I think, if I'm correct, at that time, there were 70 to 75 different groups.
Right.
In Calderdale.
Arts groups.
Arts groups have filmmaking, you know, camera work, you know, light opera, you know, and all sorts of things like that. And then I was hearing and looking at them, and then there was like, I think it maybe was it two or three organisations that were putting in for, a new lens for this camera or, you know, and I would say, well, how long do these last? And there's a shuffling of feet, you know, because some of the people that were on the committee were also putting in for money, you know, and it all gets a bit safe, shall we say. And I just pointed out, I said, well, I personally, there's another one in who's looking for a PA for a pub in, I think it was called The Anchor, in Brighouse, and he'd been running some jazz gigs there. But, I was asking about five times more.
Right.
Yeah. And I just gently pointed that out and said, you know, I can find people in a phone call that will do a wonderful job and record, you know, for less than half that. And I'm not knocking the application, but, you know, and I knew the guy anyway, so I knew what was going off there.
Yeah.
And that was good, that got carried through, you know, so...
So what kind of coverage were there for Calderdale? Were there, like, certain areas that were hotspots for the arts like there is now, or was it a little bit...
No, I think it was close and comfortable.
Right.
You know, it was a bit of an agreed committee for, I think, a long number of years, where it was the classical side. And I know that the orchestral... promoters, they've been doing it for a very long number of years and very successful.
Okay.
But suddenly there was new boys and girls on the block who knew how to apply for things, and quite rightly. And so there was, I wouldn't say turmoil, but there were some glum faces that were actually putting in for good projects, you know. And then there were the others that weren't.
Right.
You know, so so that was, I was quite pleased with that.
And there was the project spread, so when it comes to where the projects were in Calderdale and the activity, was there like hotspots for arts then, or?
Well, there was a good bit going off in Ebden, and we were, as ever, quietly doing away in things in Sorby Bridge, for example.
Right.
There was one or two bits around Halifax. There's like Halifax Light Opera, I remember. So there was a couple of sort of musical organisations. Then, as I've said, there was the classical music orchestral promoters.
Yeah.
And
Was there an orchestra in Calderdale?
I think a school's one. I can't remember whether there was an adult one happening. So it was just promotions that organisation was doing.
Okay.
They were very old, you know, they've been in it for a long number of years, and orchestras did like to come, I know that, and the acoustics were pretty good in the Victoria Theatre.
Yeah.
As they can be for acoustic Victorian halls, you know. It's, so that works well. And it was quite a while, we didn't start the jazz programme off for a good bit, and I'd done my term at there. On the committee there, so.
So when was your term there? What era was you?
Well, again, it was roughly the same time as when I joined Jazz Centre North.
Okay.
And so there was people started to know about me then, you know, in those terms, and the music officer at Calderdale. So I got invited onto that one too. We met a mark. I was quite happy with that, you know.
Was there any standout projects for you then that you remember well, that you supported and you enjoyed?
Not really. I think what I was quite pleased to get across was I wasn't there just for jazz.
Right.
Because that would be unfair, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, was and still am a citizen of the area, so I was quite happy and comfortable with the fact that I'd put some of the officers there into thinking in a different way when these applications were coming in.
Yeah. You know. And was there quite a good level of investment for arts at the time? Has that changed, do you think, to how it's
I can't been? Remember financially what the budgets were. It's too long ago now.
Yeah.
And once I'd left Jazz Centre North, I'd just got too busy, I'd gone freelance again there. But it did. I suppose you could say there was a lasting thing of my part there, because people could put some applications in that they thought, well, we'll never get that, you know. But that worked all right eventually, I think. But I also got them to see, but don't think they're going to write it straight in. You're going to have to do. So, you know, going back to the applications, they were just fairy.
Right.
You know, they weren't honest, really. And some of them, I would say, were written with a huge sense of entitlement.
Oh, okay.
They thought they should have it.
Right.
You know, and yeah. And I think partly I got that, one of the impressions I got because of that was they were slapdash. It was almost like, oh, we'll just write this out and we're bound to get it. You know, we deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I managed to just alert people to that, but that's not the way, you know, because otherwise you don't want people laughing up the sleeves, you know. But oh, it's easy, you know, just slap something together and
you kind of changed the standard of what you expected to see in an application.
Yeah, and I felt I could, because I wasn't an outsider, so I could say things.
Yeah, you know. Could bring that like constructive criticism
into
the conversation.
It was.
And but, you mentioned, go on, sorry, what was
I was going to say, but the arts officers to start with had recognised, you know, my skills.
Yeah.
And what have you. So there was no shuffling of feet from that side of the table, really.
Yeah. How long was you involved there?
How long?
Yeah.
I think about 2 years.
Yeah,
something like that, yeah.
And you was at you mentioned earlier in the conversation about Leeds College of Music.
Yeah.
So that's where our backgrounds collide.
Yeah.
And you were there for 3 years, you said, on the
government. Yeah, it was near enough anyway. Yeah.
So you'll know what I mean when I say, was that in the old building or
new
building?
Oh, it was the old building.
It was in the old building.
Yeah. I loved it there. Yeah. It was great.
So what era was that? What time?
Again, that was that 83 to 86 period.
Uh-huh.
And I was being invited because I was probably seen as someone who could help them get money from Jazz Centre.
Yeah.
Jazz Centre North.
And it was a very pure jazz college then, wasn't
it?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It started, obviously, over the years, it started to expand into other genres of music, but then it was very pure jazz, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed going when I found out about the lunchtime gigs and things like that. But my partner, Margaret's uncle, Dickie Horden, was one of the original tutors there. Yeah. I don't know if you...
I heard his name, I never met
him. Yeah, it's a trumpeter.
But he was quite a legend.
Yeah, old school as well.
Mm.
I mean, I remember Rick Taylor saying to me when we got to know each other, oh, yeah, it was all right with Dickie, you know, but... A lot of us were put off by the fact when we got there and he had a little bit of a speech. He said, I'm not going to teach you to be star soloists. I'm going to teach you to be session musicians. Well, I understand where he was coming from, but that's, you know.
And the skill of a session musician is so, it's a real art to be able to be a session musician.
I mean, I could see when Rick told me straight away, I could, because I'd met by then Dickie a bit, and although I didn't know Margaret then. But I understood, he was saying it's not all, you know, sort of chocolate and roses or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, unlike, in many ways, if you walk into the classical world, it can be a career.
Mm-hmm.
I was fond of telling... students and people who we were running workshops for, you know, well, you've come out of college now and you think it's going to be, everything's going to be mapped out for you. Mm-hmm. Jazz world ain't like that.
Yeah.
So you...
It's a bit rockier than that.
It is. And you'll have to do things like functions.
Mm-hmm.
But for goodness sake, go with that good heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not listening. That's fine. You could work in some new music, rehearse it, getting paid for it. But so that was all right. I enjoyed those things. And then around that time, but a little bit earlier, I'd helped get a group together in Sorby Bridge because they were trying to close down the job centre there.
Okay, so whereabouts was the job centre then?
Well, it was in the building where we had those tin cans with no labels on. It was one of those. Shops, yeah. Yeah, and I'd leafleted a bit outside and I was asked to move on, you know, so okay, I'll make this and go to the pavement, not on your little bit of tarmac. Mm-hmm. And people didn't know what was happening. So, you know, because it was difficult at Sorby Bridge at that time, 81, 82. A lot of stuff just disappearing in terms of work. And so, you know, some people were, okay. And then I wandered up to the Founder Street Mission down here.
Oh, okay.
And that was then being run by Calderdale. And I made myself known. I'd come out of Goldsmiths a little bit earlier from the community youth work course. And so they were all over it. Oh, can you do this, that? And I told them what was happening on there. And I said, I want to try and set this little group up. There's one or two people asked me, could they help up then? Mm-hmm. And they were very responsive. So we met there for quite a while.
Okay.
Did a little bit more picketing as such. And then...
So what were you picketing for?
Well, this was just to keep the centre open.
Yeah,
because
okay.
it was a thing that you had to go up a certain time to sign on up in Halifax.
Yeah.
Well, you could have to go up there and wait an hour before you were being seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and honestly, people couldn't afford to go sit in a cafe. They were skint.
Mm.
You know, and I said, that's why we need this down here. And I was invited to speak on the group's behalf at the council. They had some, I think, fairly high-flying civil servant from Leeds come mm-hmm. to bat away, you know, why it had to go to Halifax. But actually, I didn't know at the time, he didn't know. And then I brought in this fact, you know, and then there's the youngsters, you know, 16, 17-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
They've got nothing. You know, and well, they, you know, they could come up to Halifax. It's only every other week. And I thought, oh, I've got you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, I'm sorry, you're wrong there. Youngsters under 18s have to go every week. And his face was furious because somebody hadn't briefed him properly.
Okay.
It was kept open.
Okay.
You know, so that was all right.
And was Founder Street at that time a youth centre? Because
there was a youth centre happening as well,
yeah.
There. Yeah.
So it was more of an open centre for lots of other things.
Yeah, oh
on,
yeah.
But they had youth.
They'd badminton going, for example.
Uh-huh.
And I think I did try and get a tea dance going, you know, with some of the
yeah.
elder, but we couldn't quite work the finances out of that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, so that worked all right.
And Foundry Street's just down from where you live as well, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
Over during the pandemic, it
yeah.
was actually, Calderdale Council mentioned that it was going to close. And
yeah.
The community's kept hold of it, haven't they?
Yes, they have. It's one of those things that, like, you know, the fire station and
mm-hmm.
swimming bath in Sorby Bridge. I guess for the Joe and Disview, councils can't wait to get rid, although they still own them.
Yeah.
But other people have to do all the keeping it clean and tidy and, you know, so... But yeah, so that'll be all right, really.
Yeah, it's good to see that it's stayed open. It's in community ownership now, which is
yeah.
cool. And then you've done other things in the local area as well,
yeah.
haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about the journalist strike when I was at the course at Goldsmiths,
mm-hmm.
78 through to 80 when I was there. I can't remember how long it lasted, but I was just potting around and I knew some... couple of journalists I didn't know were,
yeah.
and they said, no, we're going to start up a free press. And I said, oh, I'm on part some holiday. I explained what I was doing. And he said, well, come on. One of them was Barry Collins, of course, the playwright. I don't know if...
I've not heard of Barry Collins.
Well, maybe come back to that one in a minute or two. And then so I helped get it together. I went out and interviewed people. It was quite fun, really, you know. And they were always good. At that time, the Courier had started to change from being a little bit serious, but a good evening, you know, daily paper in the area, into a bit more of a right-wing thing. I think the company Johnston Press was sniffing around or something.
Oh, okay.
And so they were having a go about that. Christopher Ackroyd was there, do you know that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And
was she part of the Free Press then?
Oh, yeah.
Was
yeah.
she part of the Halifax?
No, they were all out on strike, so that's okay. Where they were. And maybe me, I suppose. They were, you know, they went, oh, it's horrible, this, that, and I get stories spiked, you know. Yeah. Mm. I said, well, why do you work here? Just so honest, you know, I didn't think that. And there was, you know, it was like someone had dropped a fart, you know. people were looking at me and shuffling, and I realised, yeah, it's a job, you know.
It's like a bit of an awkward moment, but people are there because they love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so tell us a little bit more about the Free Press then. Was that a paper that just covered Halifax, or did it cover Calderdale?
Calderdale. So
it covered the whole area.
Yeah. It was paid for, you know, at the news agents and things like that. We did all right. I quite enjoyed, and you know, and I learned a bit from that about sort of how to present written things and what have you. So.
And so, were you a journalist on that press as well? Then did you create?
Well, I would never describe myself as that. I went out and said, Jeff, could you just go and talk to, you know, yeah, and I just make notes. I went out and found things basically, you know.
Found out what was going on in the area and
just
what was going on.
This is happening a bit, you know, so they actually went off and did.
Yeah. So how long did that go on for then?
I can't remember, maybe a year. I didn't do it because I'd go back to Goldsmiths, but yeah. Mm. So I did enjoy that, and it was interesting because some news agents took it but stuck it under a counter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they weren't intending to sell it then?
If anyone asked, you know, they were.
It sound like a dodgy paper, well, doesn't
it? Indeed. You know, put it on the desktop and, oh no, you know.
Yeah, I don't know about that paper.
No.
Shifty.
It was done. It was well briefed, I thought, you know, and it was well produced. And can't remember how many pages there were now, but. Yeah.
And did it cover like a whole range of topics?
Yeah, it did.
Or was it mainly hyper local focused? Or
well, it was about Calderdale. Right. Yeah, yeah. You know, unless something from further afield, you know, came across us, you know, they might mention of that. But there was enough to be going on about.
That sounds good. So who instigated that then?
And the journalists.
The journalists.
Yeah, it was up and running when I sort of found out about it. Yeah.
Right. That sounds fantastic. And then the other things that you've done locally as well. I mean, you ran a pub for a while.
Oh, yeah. Me and my brother, we took on the Three Pigeons. Mm. Saved it from being gutted, I have to tell you as well. I mean, for people who might not know, it's a very genuine Art Deco pub. 1932 it was built, and it was a time when breweries built their own pubs and to very high standards as well. Okay. I mean, there was even 3-inch solid oak doors down in the cellar, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
And whereabouts is this pub?
Well, this is down what it's called the bottom end of town, and it's about 3 or 4 minutes walk from the football ground, the Shea, but more towards the centre.
Yeah.
A lot of mills down, factories down there. Not at that time I'm talking about, but there are a lot of them have been pulled down. We turned a moribund pub into a real cracking thing in less than 3 months, to be honest. Mm. Yeah.
And was it a drinker's pub? Was it eater's pub? Or?
Yeah. Was it
a food? Or was it
very, very, very rarely.
Yeah.
We did buffets.
Right.
If people wanted them, but it was a good drinker's pub, and one of the things we used to do, usually from November till say February or March, because that's the death months, and we used to have people coming in. It might be a spouse, or it could be a grandchild, and if it's those that like the younger end, you know. We've come in because my mum's auntie, grandma, or whatever, used to drink in here years ago.
Right.
And we just wondered, you know, we thought we might like to have a wakey, if that's possible. I said, well, that's possible. Did you want a buffet with it? Oh, please. Mm. So that went on for, you know, quite a while.
Yeah. Is it quite a big place then, the book?
Not particularly. Mm. Somewhere else where we need...
Yeah, like that's the list of places to go.
Yeah. There's, when you came in through a little bit of a hallway, immediately to your left and to the right were two rooms off. It's like a sort of circular area in the middle there. Mm. If you can imagine that, and then the bar was to one side, and then there was what used to be the tap room, that was off to the right, slightly to the rear of the pub. Then there was a function room in the back there, just it was small.
Yeah.
But yeah, it had been really well looked after, except the person who ran it at the time just didn't make a really good job of it, you know. Okay. And so we turned it around, but we did find some plans about gutting it,
mm-hmm.
that were tucked away downstairs in what was used as an office.
Right.
Yeah, because, we stopped that straight away, you know. Yeah. It wasn't going to happen, you know. And we found the old original Art Deco doors in a second. There was, apart from the beer cellar, there was the ordinary cellar, mm-hmm. and then there was one further up that we discovered. And we had these lovely doors, they're heavy, but they got that Macintosh type lettering in chrome on the window, so we got them out and cleaned them up and put them back.
Wow.
You know, because the whole point about having doors is when it's cold in midweek or early, when there's nobody in most rooms, you shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't make it into one wide area and then spend a fortune of keeping it warm when there's hardly anybody in, you know. Stupid people in those days.
Yeah. And what did you do there? Like you said that you turned it round, so obviously you thought about the space and how it were laid, you know, how it was presented. But what else did you do?
Well, we cleaned it up for starters.
Right, did you need a good clean?
Yep, and then we were just a happy couple.
Mm-hmm.
Brothers running, you know. Mm-hmm. And people used to say, it's great here now. We never know who you're going to get when you two are on. We take the piss out of a lot. I mean, it was just really good fun. We sorted the beer out.
Yeah.
You know, we were there. We knew people that would come in and check us out because we're friends or family.
Yeah.
And we weren't miserable. We just got on and did things.
Yeah. Did you use that as an opportunity then for live music?
We concentrated on getting it turned around first. That was the immediate thing. We stopped one music thing that was happening, which was a bit of a session by some local folk musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a time when we realised that most of the year we had two sets of sports going off, the rugby and the football. And one was either Friday night or Sunday, and the football was Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't sort of thin-lipped businessmen, my brother and I, mm-hmm. but nevertheless, you know, we'd sunk money in it.
Right.
So we needed to sort of make sure. And they wanted the room carrying on and almost closing the door as well. And we said, well, I'm sorry, but that's unacceptable to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not greedy Thatcherites, but we are here to make a living and to pay various little loans back.
Yeah. And that they're all the money that you'd secure to be able to enter into the business in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so some were grumpled, you know, but about it. But as I said, we were perfectly polite with them, but it had to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was also a quiz, which I can't bear. So
that went.
Well, the people who wanted to carry on were from a vocational side of life, but they wanted us to pay their fees for joining the league and things like that.
Mm.
And I said, well, we're not really prepared to do that. Again, I got the spiel out again, you know, we're not raving Thatcherites, but you're all people that don't have a drink. You come in, most of you just get a soft drink, which is it's fine, but then that's it for 3 hours.
Mm.
And if we're as full as I think we're going to be, you know.
You need to be crisp.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you bring any other music in then?
Eventually.
Yeah.
One of the rooms, I put a duo, because they were proper seating round, you know, the walls, so it was spaces, because they weren't that big, the rooms. And so I got sometimes a duo, sometimes maybe a trio. We couldn't do, it's like my room next door, we couldn't put a drum kit in there unless people wanted to use brushes. So we had a little bit of jazz going, and, you know, some other forms of music as well. We didn't charge for it, we weren't bothered. The money we paid the people, it never paid its way in terms of bars, but that wasn't what it was about, you know. It wasn't about, although that contradicts what I've been saying. But it was more to do with just something that people might like to enjoy, you know.
And being a lover of music yourself, then I'm sure that it brought you some enjoyment as well.
Oh, of course, I used to sit in there.
Yeah.
Because for the first 6 or 7 months, we didn't have a day off or a night off.
Right.
You know, which said, well, I'd said, we need to work out who's coming, where, what they drink, get to know them, you know, and see us both in action, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was hard towards the end, but I just felt it had to be done. Derek hadn't run a pub or anything like that. He and his wife Maureen had a open all hours shop in West Vale, Arkwright's.
Oh, okay.
And then that was beginning to die because the last bank took the hole in the wall with them.
Mm-hmm.
So people wanted to draw money out, had to go to Welland or the bus to Halifax.
So it lost all
it
the
lost
football.
All that. Yeah. And then there was a filling station up the road a little bit who started to do groceries and stuff.
They just pulled it apart.
Yeah, they were keeping going, but it, you know, they knew. And we'd gone up to see son number one, who was working in the pub at the time, and dinner time, and he just said, I might not be here much longer. The person who owned the pub he was going to have to sell.
Okay, and that's when
I just looked at Derek, you know, I mean, I was busy, you know, I wasn't thinking. And I said, well, here's the thing. Well, what do you mean? So I said, well, why don't we buy this and run it?
Mm.
Well, I said, well, I'll be with you for the first year, full time. We can make it work, you know, as a family-run thing, you know. We could each have a regular long weekend, I don't know, once a month or you know, once we've got it up and running. So, yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
People
did
liked
you live
us.
On site then?
I didn't. Derek and Maureen did.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I was in here.
Yeah.
Then so that was good.
So how long did you hold on to that for?
It was sold, I think, 2006. We had said that we'd do it for 10 years.
Yeah.
Work hard, you know, and the money we have borrowed, we reckoned we'd get it over in a few years' time. So okay. if we sort of did up to 2005. Maybe a little bit later, we should have everything paid off. But we would be earning profit as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'd be all profit here on in.
Mm-hmm.
We paid everything off in about 18 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Who would have thought it? Which is because we were just good.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And when we spoke about this before, you were explaining about how, as a pub close to the sport ground, as landlords, you were really keen to make sure that there wasn't this atmosphere of non-acceptance of other people.
Yeah.
So if, like, supporters of the opposing team turned up, you were really thoughtful and conscious of making sure that they were welcome and there wasn't this... Yeah.
I explained to Derek why, because he's a big-time fan of the Shay.
Mm.
But I didn't feel it was right.
Mm.
You know, and it got, and he accepted it very quickly. Some of the ardent fans were a bit lippy about it, but we stayed. and it was great because suddenly I said to Derek, this is working. You know, we've had people coming in on the phones and we thought, what are they up to?
Mm.
It turned out when they came up to Halifax and didn't know the area or where the good pubs were, they'd split up to 3 or 4 different pubs. And they talked to each other.
Until they found about, them.
Yeah. Mm. And there was, I think it was Brighton at the time, because they were quite low down then. And I could hear him say, oh, yeah. And then I picked up and he said, it's brilliant here. They're not treating us like animals. You know, it's great. You know, beer's good. come on down. And that was happening. And then we got pointed out by some of the Halifax fans that you're in another bloody fan, soccer fanzine here. They just love this place, you know. They were, and the guys weren't complaining. And that was like going around the league.
Yeah.
And of course, it helped financially as well.
Yeah.
You know, so no, that was good. Mm. I enjoyed all that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then he did something else quite major in the local area as well. The club that he set up.
Oh, the Club Afrique.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. It came out of a throw party one night, as is my wont often. And I think I was playing quite a bit of African music, you know. Mm. And, it's like a nightclub, and it just come to me, you know, the Club Afrique. And I've really enjoyed doing that. And that was promotion all through Calderdale. Mm-hmm. Mainly music, but not always jazz. I used to do some of it in my front room here.
Okay.
I could get 28 people seated in chairs, not on the floor. And for maybe a five-piece band, but again, no drums. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would split people's ears if you did that. Mm-hmm. Or we could bring a snare drum, you know, things like that. Because of the bay windows, they could put the band in there.
And that
was just great. I didn't want to overdo it. I've got an upstairs neighbour in the flat above me. And, you know, I had a chat with her. And she said, oh, that's going to be all right. It's not like every month here. And it wasn't. But we always tried, we generally did it Friday or a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So what do? You have a party afterwards, you know what I mean? And it worked so well. And then, you know, I took different things down to the puzzle a bit, did things at the works as it was then, something up in Todd at the White Hart, and something at the social club there.
Yeah. And so these are all like local pubs and
clubs, yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah.
So the puzzle's just literally down the road from where you live. And,
yeah. And sometimes in the Broughton Brow Working Men's Club.
Yeah.
We did some stuff there because it's a good capacity.
That's on the main road, isn't it?
Yeah, that was all right. And quite a while before I set this up, there was the Sturtbridge Inn that was alive then.
Oh,
and
yes.
That goes back to this other company I had, Turns Entertainments, but maybe that's another time to talk about that. I don't know if we touched on that.
We haven't touched on that.
No.
So what was it called? Turns?
Yeah, Turns. Uh-huh. As in it's a good turn.
Yeah.
And that was, I was pretty much straight out of Goldsmiths.
Okay.
And looking around for something to do. And I went up to see what was happening up there at the club, because I knew it was set up not just a community and a youth club, you know.
Yeah.
And the guy running it said, well, could maybe find you something. And one of the two main officers, youth and community officers, was in there. Oh, and where did you study? I said, yeah, I've studied down Goldsmiths. Well, his eyes lit up. He said, oh, that's the big one, isn't it? I said, well, I understand it. So, if you can work with the youth worker here, it would be we'd really appreciate it, you know. So I turned up once or twice a week. Then with a friend, Howard Priestley, we started to do black and white photography basics.
Okay.
Yeah, we did silkscreen printing because, of course, that was the rage.
Yeah.
You know, a few years before then, but it was still like the thing to be doing. And so we started taking some touring jazz and some touring theatre in as well.
Mm-hmm.
That worked well, which led on to me running the jazz all the time. It's just, again, I keep saying this, just so many links just keep popping up, you know, and what I did.
And how things have kind of gradually built the way you start from in one place and it's built into something else and built into something else.
And I'm not aware of it at the time. I'm just doing it, you know.
You're just getting on with it.
Yeah. And so what I wanted to do up there, which is for people, again, who don't know, it was about maybe a mile out of Halifax Town Centre, maybe a little less. I wanted to bring some theatre in and I wanted people who would normally only realise, think theatre's about black tie and you know, through TV and films, things like that. I wanted to show them that it's interesting, this so-called low-level theatre, touring theatre, and it's not what you think, you know, you may well enjoy some of it. And Stuart, the guy who ran the Bowling Green pub just below, he had a chat with him. He said, oh, I'll bring a bar up. Sounds interesting. So after the theatre or the music, it depended. Sometimes, if it was like jazz or something like that, we'd put a DJ slot in.
Okay.
And then Anna send us a bar and we'd do some basic food as well. And
yeah.
It worked well, mainly more music. We couldn't get many people that we would love to have come in. They just weren't all that keen on for whatever reason. Yeah. But it worked in other ways, you know. It's I was quite happy with that one. Yeah.
So that was that started with the Club Afrique and then it built into something else?
No, I hadn't done the Club Afrique at the time. That came a little bit
that
later.
Came after us.
Yeah. But Turns Entertainments we formed because the writing was on the wall, not in a bad way, but the venue was going to be used for something quite different, really.
Okay.
And our time, we wouldn't be able to get good use of it, you know, during the day and what have you, which is okay, you know, that's what's needed. And so we put that together, mm-hmm. And then we did stuff around. Yeah. And there was just me and a couple of mates did that, you know.
Okay.
And then, you know, the Club Afrique came a little bit later.
So the Club Afrique basically came about from you inviting some friends around for something here, and it became a thing, it became a local thing.
And I was enjoying it. You know, it was really good, making things happen.
And was that the thing where you had a cabaret connected with that as well?
that wasn't Turns, yeah. That was... it's one of those odd ones. I mean, I put it together. Yes. So I could say, in actual fact, when I do remember, I called it Little Bafferick Presents.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. So it was like linked together.
Yeah, yeah. Because it become a good name by then, and still is.
Yeah. People have got used to the name and get an ear out for what was going on.
Oh,
yeah.
Great. We know what's it's Jeff. So, yeah. So we did that, and I deliberately chose like mid-November because it's horrible outside.
Yeah.
It's cold and wet and windy. And I did it on a Monday night.
Mm.
And everyone's looking at me going, you're mad. I said, I'm not so sure. I think we can pull this one off. Because we always had people helping me. And I only did one each year.
Okay.
I didn't want to sort of overcook it.
So just one night?
Yeah.
Like a one-off? Yeah.
We were full by 7:30 each of the 3 years.
Really?
It was great.
And when you say full, was that here at your place again?
Oh, no, sorry. That was at the Puzzle.
That's okay.
Yeah, needed it there. Couldn't have done it in here.
Yeah.
And it worked so well. I for various reasons, I'd got bags and bags full of nylon fun furs of all sorts of colours. And so I took them down and we covered all the tablecloths with that.
Yeah.
Put candles on them in both rooms, you know, not just the music room. I took all these old theatre lights you've seen in the house.
Yeah.
I took them down and they were the lighting.
Like industrial theatre lights, aren't they?
Yeah. So I took them down. It was just good. It was really, really good. And, you'll get the drift of it if I tell you the first year. There's our little quartet, Close Harmony Quartet, that one thing. We had a guitarist going there. We had a fire eater outside. What else we did? Oh, I can never remember how you'd describe them. It's one of those... magic things, you know, where there's two people and one of them's blindfolded, and you say, well, you say, pull ever what's on your top pocket out, but don't tell us what it is.
Uh-huh.
And then my assistant here will stay blindfolded and will be able to tell you sooner or later what that item is. And it's the clues in the words and how they say.
Oh, I see.
Have you never seen that?
No, I've never seen that.
Oh, right. It was a mainstay of local theatres and things like that, and the music halls, you know.
That was just
part of it. Yeah. And so that was on, and then we, at that time, Sorby Bridge had the world champion knife thrower and axe thrower.
Oh dear.
So we got him in the room.
In the puzzle?
Yep, and he was throwing at our lovely barmaid at the time, whose mother went outside, she couldn't bear to watch.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have stuck around either, to be honest.
It was great. There's a knack.
Yeah.
To that, and of course, as you know, the music room with the puzzle is tiny.
I know.
He could almost lean over and just...
Yeah, exactly.
But what he didn't know, and she didn't know, is we'd wired it up with special effects. So every time something hit, you know, the bullseye thing, which she was tied up against, it was like a boing or a... You know? And what else did we have?
So were these all local acts?
They were. Oh, burlesque.
Burlesque.
We had two burlesque happens. Yeah, you know, and that it was just so good. People were queuing up to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. That sounds so much fun. And I think you've got to really, I mean, not only does it sound like fun from the way you've described it, but like if you know the puzzle pub.
Yeah.
And it's like a small, at that time it would have been quite the traditional layout of the pub. It was a different layout to what it is now.
Yeah, not much different because it hasn't changed that much. We've just gained some space here.
So the rooms have been made into one bar. Right, yeah. I see.
Yeah, so look on the web, anyone that's listening, thepuzzlehole.
Yes, that's funny.
And it's ours.
Yeah.
It's great. So that was just lovely, and of course we went on. We, you know, we played music and recorded music. Probably 1 o'clock, 1:30, even on a Monday night. Yeah. I did it 3 times, and then I could see for it to continue working, we needed to be able to pay people. Mm. The first year they very generously just, you know, came along and did the performances for nothing. We managed to get a little money on the second year, but, you know, on top of that, they're all performing artists one way or another.
Yeah.
And they came because they loved the pub, but they were very local, and we needed to bring some more in.
Yeah.
And actually, it wasn't long before the pub got shut and robbed and raided and, you know.
It's had some troubled history, hasn't it, the puzzle at various times?
It has, yeah.
The lovely pub that it is and the atmosphere it's got, it has had difficult times as well, hasn't it? So So you mentioned something else to me earlier, the Underwater Cavalry Club, and that's connected to the puzzle as well, isn't it?
Yeah, we formed that, I can't remember how, why. There was a local, Jerry Melanie, who sadly died a few years ago on his 50th birthday, a bad heart. He was a nutcase.
Right.
You know, we him and I used to get on really well. We just used to decide we'll do something that night often and just walk in into the pub and say to the landlord or landlady, right, we're going to do this tonight, all right, oh yeah. You know, people always came. And but it's got historical links. In the Victorian times, there were bands around through the country called Whiffenpoof. I think it might be a German term, I'm not sure.
Whiffenpoof.
Yeah, but the point was, all the instruments were made out of anything. There was no proper instrument there. And that linked it to the fact the poor buggers had no money.
Ah, right, I see. Well,
Could, yeah.
Get that, yeah.
So it'd be literally blowing down a kettle. There was like, what they call
cardboard tube.
Yeah. Zob sticks. What mainly were a broom handle that you got a clog and you nailed it to that and you put all beer top cap, you know, the crown cork, the metal ones, and you could shake it.
Right.
And it was just full of stuff like that and fancy dress.
Uh-huh.
Jerry managed to get made a Spitfire that he could get in the middle. It was made in two and then strap it around him. my uniform, which again a link, came from Deptford, from the Playman Arts scheme that we did down there, of a gnome's outfit. It was in silk-like material, and there were 3 main colours. It was like a burnt orange. There was a lime green and a kingfisher blue.
Ooh.
With a hat on. And
that sounds very fancy.
And everyone else had different sorts of costumes there.
Yeah.
And one of my big treats was I got to sing Singing the Blues in the worst awful voice that you've ever heard, a la the pub singer that can't sing, you know. Although I did it punk fashion.
Did you do any recordings of them?
No. Often, you see, we never thought about...
We were more in the moment.
Mm. Sadly, in some ways, because it means I'm scratting sometimes to remember things that we're talking about, because I never wrote anything down. So, you know, I do regret that now. But it was...
At the time, though.
Yeah, and it was fun.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah.
And earlier, you just mentioned very, very briefly about, I think you said The Puzzle is Ours, and it's a great place. Oh, just tell us a little bit more about...
Yeah, I should have said that. Yeah. Eventually, we managed to buy it. And it's run as a cooperative now.
Right.
The thin-lipped businessman that I talked about earlier, who ran a particular company, that pub company, that owned the Puzzle, wanted to sell it because there was too many repairs wanted, really. Right. They were asking £350,000 for a tiny pub that if you get 70 people in...
Yeah.
You know, you're ragged. You know, I couldn't believe it. So we got someone to have a look at what it might cost for us. He said, I can do this for you, Jeff. He said, one of the things I do, I do two things. I work for the majors in putting sellers in and things like that. But then I do it for little pubs like you at less price. So and I also go and I cost pubs up for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that for you. And I am qualified, so you'll get it right. So you come in, had to look round. £40,000. No more than 42, Jeff. Don't mess about. He said, this is ridiculous. And that was, he said, to get this back up and running, because the buggers have been in and took all the stone slates off. You know, crooks.
Wow.
Because it's such a low roof onto the road, it's easy to get up to.
I didn't realise that had happened.
Oh, yeah. Some people using the stage, they ripped up the thing to get on it, using it as a shooting gallery, you know, safe from the eyes of the police. And then there were other vandals getting in and literally ripping all the lighting wire out. I mean, I think they must have been youngish 18, 19 year olds, because there wasn't enough there to make it worth your while. And then just people who were coming in to rip everything out of it.
Yeah.
And what was it, 2.5 years, 3 years maybe? I can't remember. Now, so it was all coming in, the elements, so we managed to get, and they, you know, they didn't want to do anything. So
did, just out of interest then, when you put that on the table to the owner, did they take it?
No, but, you know, we'd got going then with the fundraising, and we weren't far off, I don't think, maybe about 300 in grants and loans, but we went back to them. We knew there was someone in the offing who'd been talking to me, and I was a little bit unclear about him. And he said, well, I'll back off, you know, let me know if you don't get the money together and I'll come in. But I just think he was just soft-soaping us.
Okay.
So we upped it to just over 60,000,
right.
And we got it, you know.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it is such a great place to visit, isn't it?
I mean,
the atmosphere, the music that gets put on there, it's great. The beers are great, the location's fabulous. So it's got so much.
It's between the canal and the river.
Yeah.
But don't worry, because we'll never get flooded.
No.
You know, it's.
It's good.
It was built 1640, I think.
Mm. You know. And it was a brewery at one point.
At one time, that was, I think, very late 19th century going through.
Yeah.
Maybe, I think in the 30s, 1930s, I think. Yeah.
So it's actually brewed its own beer at that point.
Yeah.
And how long have you been involved at the Puzzle then?
I had my first pint there, 15 year old, 1961.
Oh, so 10 years ago.
62
years
almost,
ago.
Yeah.
62.
Fell in love with it.
Yeah.
Had to put my gruff voice on, you know.
Pretend to be that little bit older.
Yeah,
we've all done it, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's a really good place. And I think you were saying earlier that you've got like a role, is it? The co-op is part of that ownership, you've got a role.
Oh, honorary president, yes.
Honorary president. Mm. Does that mean you get a couple of free pints?
Oh, yeah. it's good. So we're happy. Little bit of a rocky start. I mean, partly to do with lockdowns and COVIDs and people not coming out. And then we just got up and running again and we were locked out again, you know, the next 2 weeks, you know. So it was, and you lose people, you know, even the most regular of regulars, they get somewhere else. And they just get used to that, you know, so. And it hasn't suited everybody, you know.
Yeah.
And,
and people do move on to different things, don't they? But I think you know, it's got, you only have to check out the Facebook page, people, to see what's going on at the Puzzle. Yeah. There's some great bands and stuff going on, so.
Yeah.
So listening to yourself and what you've contributed to the local area, you know, obviously Leeds is one of the nearest major cities, but then you did you contributed a lot to Halifax Centre with regards to the art, the council and being on the art forum there, and then like super local in Sarby Bridge and what you've done here. But I guess one of the things that really fascinates me is, you know, you've done a lot for arts in the local area, and it's not being driven by financial gain. It's been really driven for a passion for the arts and a passion for getting people involved and getting people in the fun of it and enjoying it, and it kind of bringing some good stuff into people's lives. And I'm pretty sure there'll be people right now in the area that are keen to do something similar. Or they might be listening to this in a different part of the country completely. But what would you, if you was with them and having a chat and sharing your experience, what would you
want? Have a go. You know, just, it's not easy. I mean, I just did it through, there's always laughter inside me. I never thought about how I would move. It was never a career plan. I just wanted people to be happy. And you can do it, you know, it's just, have a go. If it's people that, you know, go to see and listen to performing arts, then they'll have an idea of what they might like to do. And there is, in other places, maybe a little bit more funding available than what we do. One of our major problems, as I've been told often by potential funders, well, you don't raise any money on the door, you know, so you're always going to be coming back for money. I said, well, you know, look at the quality that we put on. You know, we're fighting way above where we should be. You know, it's we've got some very serious musicians, not just on the jazz side. They like to come, but we can't charge because of the layout of the pub. It's tiny. You know, and there's one room, the bar room, and the other one used to be the tap room, which is now called the music room. So that always helps us back. Although we've been joined by somebody, Andy Abbott, who's come to live over here, and he's pretty good. And we've now been putting, you know, applications in, and we've been able to make the Arts Council of England music officers and maybe cultural officers just sit up and take us a little bit more seriously now. They've had a look at Andy's background musically, but also in putting in, you know, for funding, things like that. I think maybe they've had a bit of a look around me now. I mean, I would never be bothered locally if nobody ever knew I was doing it. It's never ever been about that for me. And in my professional life, it's always been, as long as the people I work with and for know me, I'm not bothered about people in the audiences know who I am either. It happens a bit, especially on festivals, when they'll see me traipsing around on and off stage, and they'll say, bloody hell, he's here. I've seen him in Glasgow, I've seen him, you know, here, there, everywhere. Where do you live?
He starts to become the main act because you're there and you're in so many places. And that's like, it's really good to hear that honesty about, it's not easy, it takes a lot of hard work takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
But I really like that kind of that focus of, you know, make it about bringing enjoyment and having fun.
Yeah.
And you know, let that be the driver more than anything else.
Yeah.
And really interesting that thing of, like, be aware of the potential for funding, but don't always rely on funding.
Yeah, no, you can't, sadly, sometimes. But
and don't always put a price on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because there is that thing, isn't there, especially for the area that we live in, about not making the art something that's exclusive.
Yeah.
And making it so that anyone can go along and enjoy it.
Yeah. And based on that, there's the side that I want to make sure that people get paid for performing as well. Yeah. So you've got this sort of dichotomy going off in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's back to, on the music front, they're all supporting pubs like The Puzzle because they're coming for not a great deal of money. Mm-hmm. You know, we some of the bands that we're putting on at The Puzzle currently and before we shut down, you know, they'd be earning 200, 300, 500, 600 quid. Mm-hmm. You know, it's what they deserve. You know, but we make it happy for them, so that's not too bad, you know. Yeah.
And there is a heritage with The Puzzle.
Oh, yeah.
Musicians know about The Puzzle.
Yeah.
Because of its heritage.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something, I think, when you're involved in music or the arts, about being able to have the experience of playing somewhere, and irrelevant of the money, just to be able to, you know, have that experience of playing there as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's really quite an important thing to keep hold of as well.
But we still treat them right. We have, if they want PA, we have it. It's set up and ready. In all those first 16 years, we didn't even have a PA. It's that small. Yeah. I mean, dare I say, you know, I was putting musicians on that listened to each other before, and then they'd adjust before they start playing. They'd work it out and think, oh.
Get the levels right.
Yeah. And when they came again, they just knew.
Yeah.
And it's levels that they're playing, not that, you know. But we do have a small PA now that works. And that's fine. And generally, it'll be a chat mic. Mm-hmm. And it, often, the saxophonist won't bother either.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, what kind of saxophone needs mic?
Yeah. Yeah. Trumpeters sometimes would like one. But it varies, you know. And so it's all there. We make sure it's warm.
Yeah.
It's comfortable for them. It's a good sound on stage. Yeah. That was an accident, but it happened, you know, just through rebuilding inside a little bit here and there. But yeah, you know, I'm happy with that.
Yeah. So before we finish this episode, it'd be really good to hear one more story from you. And the one story we've not shared yet is around the Cuban dance workshop.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
The big story.
Yeah. That, funny enough, that happened in November as well. A friend of mine, Christian Weaver, who has visited Cuba a lot studying, and he lives up the road in Rittenden from here. And they'd been with him quite a while, and he said, do you think we could do something with them? There was Lolita and Alberto. We could do something with them just to give them a bit of space. I said, well, look, why don't I put a meal together? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll invite one or two other people that go in the pub. The house would be big enough. We can sort something out. And that went down really well. And we were having just a bit of a bop here, and that was working. And then, so Jeff again thinks, oh, well, we could maybe, just maybe, turn this into something else. So I spoke to Chris about it. And he said, well, yeah, they put a dance together, you know, easy, no problem. So I thought, okay, we'll have a think about that. And we'd fixed on a date. We said we'd do it on a Sunday, I think, if I remember rightly. I might be wrong about that. And so we're here, and I told, you know, just a few people, because although the room is pretty big, it's not that big. And I had only just started to be a pal of my partner now, Margaret. Mm-hmm. So I told her about it. We'll come down here. And anyway, we were full. We could hardly move. I hadn't told anybody else. And I'm thinking, what are we going to do? And I thought, right. So I rang The Puzzle up, as you do. The landlady, her name was Pam, said, Can you clear some tables and chairs out of the music room? Is it busy? No, well, not particularly tonight. Why? I'm going to bring a dance workshop down. So she was fine, as most licensees there got used to us were. Off we shot, mm-hmm. got down there, and so we got in there, we moved a bit more furniture around, and we're having this. And then I thought, oh no, I haven't told Margaret about it. She'd come down.
Oh no.
No lights on.
Oh no.
And she'd gone back home. Oh.
That is not good, Jeff.
It wasn't.
Mm-mm.
No. Oh dear me. Yeah, I was contrite to say the least. I said I'm sorry about it. Because she wasn't really used to me and how we do things, you know, and what have you. And anyway, I made it. Up with her, that was all right, and but it's good fun.
Ah,
you know, it's great.
Yeah.
It turned out Lolita worked in music therapy in Havana, so I told her about my daughter Samantha, and then so we had a little half a day out, so I took her up to Halifax. I had a walk around there, showed her the piso, things like that. Went into Sainsbury's, I think it would have been, and her eyes just lit up.
Yeah.
There were so many goods and things that just weren't there.
Uh-huh.
And then we then went up to Heatherstones, which is run by St Anne's Housing Association. Mm-hmm. And so I took her there to have a look. I mean, you know, for people that wouldn't have known Samantha, she got meningitis when she was 6 months, and it left her, she couldn't walk or sit up, you know, speak or feed, the whole thing. She was all right in her head, she could be, we'll talk maybe later about her, but she was a cheeky little monkey actually. She was aware of what was going on. Anyway, so we went in there, and I showed her quickly around. I'd asked, you know, could we go in? And, you know, opened the bathroom, opened those harnesses for putting people in. Yeah. And Lolita was just looking sort of so amazed by it all.
Yeah. Has she not seen anything like
that? No. It's all humping.
Right.
You know, and all that
lifting
sort of stuff. Yeah. And warm. Well, it didn't matter how anything Havana, it's going to be warm, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
And what have you. And it's in a nice area. And the staff made her really welcome and asked her what she did within her, you know, career there. And then we went into, Samantha been having a bit of bed rest, so she'd come out by then. She was in her favourite place, which is the kitchen, because that's where all the staff gossip goes on.
Oh, fantastic, so she could keep up with everything.
Oh, I tell you, if they linked together because they were telling something, and you know, she clicked on and she'd sort of look, because she knew something
didn't
she didn't understand, but it's that tone of voice that, ooh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, in we went, and she was fascinated. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure she'd ever seen a black person then.
Okay.
I think so. And Lolita was like jet black. And she just got all the beads in her hair. And as she was talking and looking and trying to, talking to Samantha, they were all clicking. And she was just absolutely gobsmacked with these things. She couldn't take her eyes off.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Oh, so she got to meet your daughter as well.
Yeah, the dance
workshops. And,
yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm. You made some amazing things happen.
Yep.
Jeff.
Good, innit?
Yeah, it's good, innit?
And I still make biscuits.
I still make biscuits. Very good biscuits indeed. Well, thank you so much.
It's fine. To say we weren't sure what we might do tonight.
I know, it's all done all right, I think.
Unscripted, we have to say, too.
Yeah, you wouldn't tell, though, would you, Jeff?
No.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, it's great.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Good Mood Podcast, a series that gathers together a rich mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experiences in performing arts and music. Hosted by myself, Liz Leach, we look forward to you joining our next episode. In the meantime, please subscribe to the series, recommend to friends and family who you think would be interested in this topic, and remember to visit Jeff's website, jeffamos.com. www.mindfulnessmoodcast.wordpress.com. We look forward to you joining us at the next episode.